We're going to share about the ministry of MSC Canada and some of the things that MSC Canada is doing. While all that gets ready to roll, and I'm going to look for a clicker. He already knew that. Wow. I've taken pictures of this. I've never seen this before, the portable monitor like that. And I've taken pictures, and I've gotten Stephen's information, and our techies are going to get in touch with his techies and figure out how to do this, because this is very good. That's the Missionary Prayer Handbook. I know some will be familiar with that. This is the 2022 edition, and you can't have this one. This is Ron's copy. But the new 2023 editions will be coming out in about a month or so, the end of November, beginning of December. And the ministry that distributes them in Canada is Uplook Ministries. And so if you get a hold of Uplook, Gospel Folio Press, and again, what we try and encourage our assembly to do is at least get one for every family. They're very inexpensive and a huge resource for missions. MSC Canada and our sister organization in the United States, CMML, together we publish this. It's about 700 mission workers working in about 70 countries around the world. And it's all ordered according not only to days of the month, so you can pray around the world in a month, but it's listed according to continents and then countries. There's information on those countries. There's information on the mission workers. Importantly, information on the children of the mission workers. Birthdays for people that are living in isolation, getting a card from this side of the water is a huge encouragement. So there's information there about the children and then about the ministries that they're involved in. So I just recommend that to you. And be aware that in a month or so, 2 months, the new edition will be coming out. So this morning I'm going to talk to you as quickly as I can, although Daniel did give me a special dispensation. I can go as long as I like. Is that what you said?
No.
Very good. In any case, we're going to work through this, and I tend to talk quickly. So if I'm going too fast, do one of those, and I'll try not to take offense, right? Of course, if you want me to speak up, do this. And if you want me to speak more softly, do this. And if you want me to finish, do this. I got a million of them, as Rodney Dangerfield used to say, in any case. MSC Canada, we have about 300 cross-cultural mission workers working around the world in about 50 countries. It's a little bit fluid, people coming and going. And our constituency of churches is mainly made up of congregations like this, assemblies like this, right across Canada, about 400 of them, and then all kinds of individuals. And MSC Canada has been going since wartime, 1940. Which war? There used to be a time when there was only one war. But World War II, at the beginning of that, the Canadian government would not allow Christian charities, would not allow people, because people used to just take cash, put it in an envelope, put some address in Africa on the front of the envelope, and trust that it was going to get there. That's how business used to be done, and it worked. God is sovereign. But in the 1940s, the Canadian government said, you cannot send money out of this country. And so a group of men in this area, in the Toronto, Southern Ontario area, got together and came up with this organization just so they could receive money from Canadians and then package it and send it to where it needed to get, in a way that was according to Canadian regulations. So that's MSC Canada. Then it was Missionary Service Committee. And that's a lot of years ago now, almost 80 years ago. And we are still going on. Our services have expanded greatly over the years, and a couple of the newer ones I'm going to be sharing about this morning. And we follow a very simple model. It's called local church-driven missions. What that means is we follow the model, we support the model that local churches like this one, if they want to send, if they want to send one of their own overseas to serve the Lord in some cross-cultural situation, we enable them to do that. So for churches that don't want to engage a third party, some of those are tremendous, like Ethnos, the former New Tribes Mission. There's lots of good organizations. But for those churches that want to send their own workers and remain primarily responsible for their good, for their well-being, for their ministry, MSC Canada exists to enable local churches like this one to do that kind of a job. It's a big job today. The world has changed a lot. And nothing is easy any longer. And in our own country, CRA makes it more difficult than ever. And so that's why MSC exists. Or if you're the person or the couple that believe God is calling you to serve Him somewhere else, after you've prayed with your local church, if they believe that this is God's call upon your life, they commend you, they send you out. It's following the pattern, we don't have time to get into it today, of Acts chapter 13, verses 1 to 4. Suffices to say that it was Paul and Barnabas who had received the call of God on their lives, and if anybody had the right, you would think, to decide this is God who is calling us, and we are going there because He's calling us, it would have been them. But they didn't do that. They went to their local church leadership. And they prayed and they fasted. And while they were praying and fasting, Acts chapter 13, 1 to 4, it says the Holy Spirit of God spoke to them and said, "Separate unto me Barnabas and Paul," it was Saul then, "Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I have commended them," called them. He had called them. They didn't just go. It was very important that this is a partnership, that there's a local church of believers who have a care and a concern and a commitment. And they are involved in that process. And just as certain as God can call an individual or a couple, He can make a local church. He can convince the local church that this is indeed the call of God upon their lives. And when that happens, it says that the church which was at Antioch commended them, Barnabas and Saul, to the work to which God had called them. Very next verse, check this out. Beginning of verse 4. So, the Holy Spirit having sent them on their way. That's the model we follow. And so it's local church-driven missions, and it's committed to God's supply, which is inferred in there and taught in other places in Scripture, is when God calls someone to go, the local church confirm that this is the call of God on the lives of these folks. What is left to do? Go. Not go around fundraising, not go around trying to get $25 here and $30 there and somehow come up with a figure that makes it possible for us to go. It's to go, trusting God for His supply. And so that's the model that we continue to encourage, support, and churches that want to send people that want to be sent in that way. God calls, church sends, worker goes, and God provides. So my wife and I have been involved with MSC Canada since 1984. Initially, they were serving us. After we returned to Canada, then we got involved in serving MSC. And we do that in a number of ways. I'm on the national committee for MSC Canada. I'm a regional rep out in the west of Canada. I direct a ministry called E-Teams, and guys like Nathan Bolton have been on our teams. And also, my wife and I together are involved in something
called Worker Care. That's just a new ministry in the last 5 or 6 years. And basically, we are one of the three couples that presume to provide pastoral care to Canadian workers working in cross-cultural situations. And we've divided up the world. It's not, we're not megalomaniacs or anything like that. But Phil and Marilyn Barnes look after Africa and the Middle East. Conrad and Becky LeKelt from Edmonton, they look after Central and South America and Southeast Asia. And we have the hardest place, which is not the hardest place. It's the best, easiest place, I should say. We look after Europe, Eastern Europe, and Russia. And so we're involved in this worker care ministry. This week, so starting yesterday, we started to have mission workers come into this area at Guelph Conference Bible Conference Center. MSC is convening our second Requip conference for mission workers. And so there's over 100 mission workers, cross-cultural mission workers, who are coming here to Guelph. Not here. I understand there's a difference. But when you're from Winnipeg, anything within 500 miles is like local. In any case, and over 100 of our workers are coming, and it's this conference is for them. So they're not going to be called upon to give reports and tell their story and all. This isn't about that. There's no public side to this. It is just for the mission workers, for us to build into them. And this time, the Requip conference is going to be focused on health. So spiritual health, mental health, physical health, family health, all the way. That's the theme of 3 full days. Starts tomorrow afternoon, ends on Thursday afternoon. And so that's why we're here at the moment. So you could be praying for that. We'd appreciate it. The first time we did it was the first time. And we're not trying to supplant the local churches that are sending their mission workers, nor the relationship that they have with their workers. We're seeking to supplement that. We always revert back to our model. And again, this Requip conference proves to be a big help to those who can make it. Something else that Robin and I are involved in, initially we were very involved in a new church plant about 6 years ago, and there was a bunch of millennial young people. Back then they were all in sort of their mid-30s, and today some of them are getting on into their mid-40s. They wanted to start a new local assembly out in the northeast part of Winnipeg. They had never done anything like that before, and so they asked us if we would prayerfully consider getting involved with them. And so for the first few years, we were quite involved, and today we don't bear responsibility, and we understand what that means, other than the responsibility of coming along, enjoying the fellowship of the assembly, and contributing in the ways that everybody else contributes. And for us at our stage of life, it couldn't be better. And we have an oversight of young men, and the work of the assembly goes on. We meet at Chief Pegwis Middle School in Winnipeg. If you're ever there and you want to join us, at 9:15, we put on a breakfast. These are called new things that there's hardly any gray hair in this church, right? I think there's, well, we know how many. There's so few of us. There's 4 of us. And it was only 3, and then my wife decided to stop dyeing her hair. I got to tell you, working with a bunch of 30 and 40-year-olds and, like, giving them the keys to the car, there's something we might understand. Giving them the keys to our car, although this is the Lord's church, they're the Lord's people, it shouldn't be like this. But sometimes guys my age, it is like this, to give them the keys and say, it's yours. It's not my car. It's not my keys. You're now responsible before God. And we're enjoying our fellowship there. And so we have like almost 40 minutes of breakfast every week. We're in a school, so they bring it. And they kind of come in over a half hour, 40 minutes of time. But the good thing is at 10 a.m. when we meet to break bread, to worship the Lord, everybody's there. No one's rushed in under pressure. The kids especially have all been fed and watered. They've even run around a little bit. And they've had breakfast with their friends. And I would have to say this is a good thing for us, for our group. And so that's when we first were meeting and praying about starting this assembly, as with most things, they had their ideas. And I offered my opinion, my humble opinion, as I always tell my wife. And she just does, exactly what she just did there. I told them, they settled on Kildonan Christian Fellowship. And I said, that's not a good one. We're in North Kildonan. There's East Kildonan, Old Kildonan, West Kildonan. You get the idea. It's the name of the area. But I said, that's not a good idea. And you know why I said it wasn't a good idea? Because it's so long, everybody's going to abbreviate it. So they came up with a logo for the new assembly. So that's the esteem in which I am held in that assembly. I want to talk to you about a new ministry that MSC, that had its genesis in our national committee meeting, our annual meetings back in November of 2020, not even 2 years ago. And out of that has developed a ministry called Indigenous Peoples of Canada. This was before all the residential school stuff came up in March of 2021. But we started to talk about the need to do a lot more to this untapped opportunity, largely untapped opportunity, again, because it's in Canada. We were also going through and have done this. We no longer think of workers in terms of foreign workers who would be listed in the missionary prayer handbook and home workers. We don't think about things that way anymore. We've redesignated. And so when you get your copy of the missionary prayer handbook, you'll see there's a section. We just call them global mission workers. And if someone's working cross-culturally, if someone is living someplace to do the Lord's work that they otherwise wouldn't be, if they are primarily involved in evangelism, discipling believers, and planning new assemblies, then we are categorizing them as global mission workers, wherever in the world they are, including Canada. And so that is something new. And so under that umbrella, we are again, encouraging this ministry of Indigenous Peoples of Canada. This actual poster, I don't know if you've ever heard of a worker named Becky Q in Manitoba. I would have to believe she is the most effective, and I hear this from directors of Indigenous ministries, not connected to the Brethren, not connected to MSC or anything else. Becky Q is likely the most effective worker amongst Indigenous people anywhere in Canada. Now, that's a big statement. She does things like this. This is a poster. I don't know if you remember the Cross Canada Cruisers that came through years ago. In any case, a local artist in Winnipeg, one of our former elder of one of the assemblies in Winnipeg, came up with this poster for it. She has published it on card. There's a tremendous message on the back. And again, it's very current, as every child matters, and as there's a lot of opposition to that message when it comes to the Christian gospel, as you might expect. There's a picture of Becky. We organized our first Indigenous Peoples of Canada conference in Winnipeg, which is sort of a mecca of Indigenous, not just Indigenous ministries, but all things Indigenous. 10% of the city of Winnipeg, almost 750,000 people, are Indigenous peoples. Aboriginal, Métis, not a lot of Inuit, but those are our Indigenous peoples in Canada. And so we had our first conference in Winnipeg and again brought cross-cultural Indigenous workers from across Canada into Winnipeg. Becky Q was there. She was introducing this this poster and this new literature outreach. We had people like Rick and Linda Martin. They're commended. They've lived in Winnipeg working amongst Indigenous peoples for over 25 years. Commended from Woodside Christian Fellowship, I think it is, Bible Fellowship up in Elmira. This couple, Steve and Heidi McCandless, again commended out of Ontario, up north a bit. They are working on the north side of Baffin Island. Do you have an idea of Baffin Island? On the north side, way up there. I think Phil Barnes told us one time, we could fly to Mexico City. Mexico City is closer to Toronto than Pond Inlet is to Toronto. But they're still in Canada. They're global mission workers. Robin and I had dinner with them before the conference. I can tell you, I don't know of any mission worker in any country around the world who are working in such a cross, a completely different culture, strikingly different than anything any of us would understand growing up here in Canada. And that's there in Canada. And so this is a new area. Amongst millennials, those that are under 40 or so, the trend in missions is they are wondering why we're sending people all around the world. Now, if the Lord tells us to go, we go. But the world has come to Canada. And apart from Indigenous peoples, Muslim peoples, all people from all the nations around the world are here. And so the trend is to meet people here. Cross-cultural people that are living here and seeking to evangelism amongst those people. We had, again, 2.5 days of speakers' sessions. This was for them. Phil Barnes came along to talk to us about conflicting cultures, cultures in conflict, which is basically the Western culture, which we're a part of. And most of the people in the world live in another kind of culture, which is tribal traditional culture. Certainly those in Central and South America, Africa, and the Far East, and all those kind of places, they all look at things entirely different. Even in the Republic of Ireland, Irish people, not the Irish people from Northern Ireland that are largely Protestant, but the Irish people where we lived in the south of Ireland, they are tribal. They look at things entirely different. And so that's another study for another time. But just to realize that as we come up against people from other countries in the world, other cultures in the world, it's very likely, especially if they don't have white skin, that they're coming from a tribal traditional kind of culture. Read about it. Understand it. People coming from Western, all our relationships are have to do with contracts. Even to get married, it's a contract. Our relationships with people are negotiated. And then we hold people to what we've negotiated and agreed upon. That's how the rest of the world doesn't think like that. They think in terms of relationships. And so they don't like confronting you. Americans, even Canadians, and people from the West, they're willing to confront you because it's based on this. You said you would do this, you didn't do it. You know, that kind of thing. Things we take back to the store. That's our mindset. tribal traditional people do not think that way. To them, the relationship is what's most important. And they don't want to do anything to threaten that relationship. And so if you have people who you are working with, being friends to, loving them, bringing them into your home, and you invite them to an event, which we kind of like to do. We don't like to go to there. We always tell the young people when we're doing door-to-door work, the way you feel when you go up to that doorstep and you knock that door and that unknown person opens the door and you don't know what to expect, that's how unbelievers feel when we invite them to come into a place like this. That's the feeling they experience. Well, people from a tribal traditional culture will say, of course I'll come. They don't want to disappoint you. They like you. But they have no intention of coming. In our Western thinking, let your A be A and your nay be nay, and I know that's Bible. But these things are on a spectrum. God is merciful. Realize when that happens, it's because they don't look at things the same way. Think about it. They value the relationship, whatever kind of relationship, whatever degree of relationship, they value that. They don't want to let you down in the moment when you're face to face. There's all kinds of examples. And so we're talking to our indigenous workers and trying to bring them up to speed on these kind of things the way we do with our cross-cultural workers, and it's important. It's important. We had other speakers like Stephen Vance. He is actually taking on, he's a Christian counselor. He's a psychologist, actually. And he's working half-time with MSC Canada, and he is taking on our Indigenous workers and people like that to work with them and to help them in the worker care capacity. Another wonderful brother, Howard Jolly, a native guy, lives in just outside of Winnipeg. He works alongside the Martins from Elmira. And Howard was the longtime pastor of the First Nations Community Church in Winnipeg. He is now the national director of Christian Missionary Alliance churches for the whole of Canada. And these folks sing. And so for those that are interested, Rising Above Band. And Howard Jolly and the Martins and Rick Martin's sister and her husband, they have a band called Rising Above. It's professional quality. It's amazing. And so I'd recommend that to you. Some of the songs that Howard has written is Hurtin' People, Redeemed, Red Man's Cry, An Uncloudy Day. He didn't write that, but he sings it wonderfully. This past August, we need to get up to speed, Robin and I. And we attended an Indigenous Faith Conference down in the United States, which was so eye-opening in regards to, again, traversing these cultural issues. And a lot of pressure on evangelical mission workers as well as churches that are Indigenous to just bring in everything from the Indigenous culture into the church, adapt it, and put it on. That is not. No more would the witch doctor and his teaching in some tribe in Africa be invited to come in and bring all his paraphernalia and all his thinking into the local church. In those places, it's not right for the Indigenous church either. And one of the best, so things that are stated simply and clearly that are things that I can remember. And this brother, Ojibwe brother from Minnesota, over 40 years in the Lord's work, he shared, if you want to understand what things that are involved in Indigenous life are appropriate to be brought in or not appropriate to be brought into the local church, go and ask their priests, their proponents, their shaman, their witch doctors, whoever, and say, you know, this drum, and everybody sitting around this drum, and everybody drumming with the same beat. Is there any sacred significance to this? Does this have any spirituality attached to it? And he says, this is experience. This is why you need to listen to people with gray hair once in a while. That's at least what I tell everybody in our home church. He says, they will tell you. They're evangelists of their cause. They will tell you the significance because they believe it and they want other people to believe it. And if they tell you that it has sacred significance, if it has a spiritual aspect to it, then believe them. That should not be brought into the church. Does that make sense? What fellowship has light with darkness? We get it. We get it. Now, that might seem common sense to you, but to me, that was eye-opening. In any case, it's part of this development. We are trying to get up to speed. We have another conference put on by Indian Life Ministries in Winnipeg this coming month. Not even 8 months ago, as a part of our worker care ministry, we got as many workers from Europe onto a Zoom call. One of the few good things coming out of COVID is the fact that this kind of technology came to the fore and was developed. And it allows us to stay in touch with our mission workers wherever they are in the world. And to get us all together in the same room, there would be no other circumstances where we could get all these workers together in the same room. These are workers from Europe and Eastern Europe. And we had this call just exactly about 8 months ago, beginning of February. Some of them, because already Putin was amassing his army on the borders of Ukraine, but nobody believed that he was actually going to do this. Some of these folks, I wouldn't say terrified because they're people of faith, but they knew that something big was going to happen. And they tried to give us a heads up. They did give us a heads up. They didn't just try. And less than 3 weeks later, on February the 24th, the war in Ukraine broke out. And on that day, MSC put up notification that we had established a Ukraine relief fund. And I think we're close to $1 million since then that has come in. But most of that came in, I'll come back to this, most of that came in the first 3 or 4 months, not in the last 3 or 4 months. We need to talk about that. But MSC Canada established this fund, and as quickly as money was coming in, we were getting it out. And the crisis at that point was all the displaced Ukrainian people that were flooding out of the country as quickly as they could get out of the country to wherever they could get to. 3 million crossed over into Poland within that first couple of months. The Polish people, the government, the Polish people, along with the assemblies and our mission workers, churches and mission workers are good-willed people. We see taking care of people. What's the first commandment? Yeah. The second commandment is just like the first, to love our neighbor as ourself. And again, the tendency in Western culture is to turn that phrase into, I need to love myself. I need to love others as I love myself. And the more I love myself, gives me more capacity to love them. That's not the way to interpret that verse. We love God, and we need to love these people with the same capacity, the same kind of love. In any case, as a result of that, and there we see a map of Ukraine and the countries that surround it. I was sent by MSC Canada because Europe and Eastern Europe is our purview. I went on my own. Robin's mother is not well. And also needed to cover a lot of territory in a short amount of time to see how our workers were doing. We weren't going there to see how they were using all the funds that we were sending them. We know these people. They're people of faith. We're not worried about how they're using the funds. They're probably using everything we're sending them, plus everything they can take out of their own pockets to meet this need. That's who we're dealing with. But we went to see how they were doing. And they were being overwhelmed. As you might expect, good-willed people, believers, people that wanted to love their neighbors, the way that you might expect them to be after about 3 or 4 weeks of the onslaught. And so I had the opportunity in March and April, middle of March, the end of April, to do a lot of traveling. I saw a lot of people leaving. At the beginning of my time, the week before I left at the end of April, was the first week that more people were going back to Ukraine than were leaving Ukraine. That's how much had changed. Again, initially, everybody thought, including the leaders of our governments in the West, thought Ukraine is going to capitulate within days. They offered the president a ride out. He said, no, I'm staying. Amazing. We all know the story by now. But within 6 weeks, no, 2 months of people leaving, there were now more people going back. That changed everything. That changed everything. So that was the road that I traveled, touching base with mission workers, spent about 6,000 kilometers in a car, 10 countries, 30 plus mission workers and organizations, not just MSC, but CMML, Echoes of Service in the UK, and mission workers from other places. And a lot has happened since then. So from the early weeks of the war in Ukraine, even to the time when I left at the end of April, it was completely different. It's way different now, all these years later. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that kind of stuff. In the eye of the storm, you remain in control. And in the middle of war, you guard my soul. You alone are the anchor. When my sails are torn, your love surrounds me in the eye of the storm. We were singing about that earlier on. That's the reality. The words of Ryan Stevenson. And that's what I witnessed. That's what I witnessed. Not just from our work, mission workers, but all kinds of Ukrainian people that had been displaced. Today, they talk about people, displaced people that had left, Ukrainians that had left Ukraine. Now they're talking about displaced peoples within Ukraine. Because most of the people haven't gone back to where they lived because there's nothing there where they lived. But they have gone back to Ukraine to live in the places where they can so that they can continue to move forward as soon as there's an opportunity. One story outside of Eastern Europe before. Now we're just talking weeks after the war has broken out. On my way to Eastern Europe, I stopped in Ireland because once I'm going across the water, I'm not going to stop in Ireland. I'm not going to spend time with folks that we know. And someone that you probably know, Garnet and Gwen Cooney. I was speaking in their assembly in, it's the village of Newtown Chandrum, outside of the town of Charleville. They had been exited from the place they were renting in Charleville because of COVID. They couldn't get back in as soon as they wanted to start meeting again. So they were meeting in the little community center in Newtown, Mount Chandrum. I was there on a Wednesday night. I was speaking, and one of the elders there is a Ukrainian brother who got saved about 9 years ago. Wonderful, wonderful man. And his wife and their daughters. And I had been there a few years ago before COVID and had met her, his wife's sister's husband, who was there in Ireland visiting from Ukraine, and to see if they might emigrate at that stage. He decided, I didn't know this, he decided no, he was going back to Ukraine and his family would continue on there. This war hit, and I can't remember if it was after the war was declared or just before it. In any case, he got his family out. He brought them to Ireland. Out, way out in the west of Ireland. Even cosmopolitan Irish people from Dublin wouldn't go where these people are. There's not a lot there, but they were there because there was family there. And so I said hello to him, and his English wasn't, as I told people as I traveled, your whatever it is better than my, your English is better than my whatever you're speaking. You're doing better than me. So we didn't communicate a lot. I went outside, right where that picture is being taken, and I looked, and there's this house all lit up across the road and people all around it. I'm wondering, what's going on there? And so I asked Garnet. I said, what's happening there? He told me the people in this village, maybe 200 people, that when they found out this family of seven had arrived from Ukraine, were living with the Coonies, were in need of a house. The people of the village contacted the owner of this derelict building. 20 years, no one had lived in it. And they got busy completely renovating it. That family moved in the next week. Believers. The people in the village, for the most part, committed Roman Catholics who understand at least the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. And there's a lot of these good stories, right? There's so many of these stories. We hear about what Satan is doing. There's so many stories that would encourage us about what God is doing. This is in Wrocław, Poland. We have mission workers there, Mirek and Beata Marczak. They're in our missionary prayer handbook, commended out of Calgary. They've been there about 20 years. They actually left Poland during the Iron Curtain days. They escaped. They lived in a refugee camp in Austria. And that's where they found the Lord. And the Lord found them. And they went back after years in Canada, went back to Poland. They're involved in an assembly there. Tremendous, the work that they're doing. I was speaking on a Sunday morning. I showed them a slide of my grandson, my youngest grandson. On the day of the war, his father, our son, went out and bought a Ukrainian football scarf and put it around him, took a picture and put it up on his Facebook page. And I showed them that with Beckett holding up his finger number one. And after the meeting, a young couple and their young son was brought to me to meet me because they were waiting to hear word from the Canadian government about getting to Calgary. They had left Kyiv. Their house did not exist any longer. They could not speak English. So we were translating. So I'm telling them I know people in Calgary, and I know I do. They're believers like you and like you. So if I find out someone's coming to Cambridge, I'll be contacting you. I'll be making promises on your behalf. I just said, there's people I know in Calgary. You send me the information when you get there and what you need, and I'll let them know, et cetera, et cetera. Then the little guy standing there, I said, how old are you? And before he could answer, because he was shy, they said 5 years old. I said, did you see the picture that I put up there about my grandson? I said, he's 5 years old. Can I take a picture of you and send it to him? So he let me. His parents let me. And he didn't have number one. He just gave me a thumbs up. Here's the point. This little guy could not smile. They're telling him in Ukrainian, smile. This little guy has been traumatized. He could not smile. Could not smile. Wasn't being stubborn. Would not smile. He could not smile. Our workers were and are dealing with traumatized people, severely traumatized people, especially women and children, every day. You know what that's called? They become traumatized. So we need to pray. Pray for folks like that. I don't have time. Oh, the assembly there, the pastor of a Ukrainian church from Kyiv, he got as many of his, he's a Baptist pastor, got as many as his people together that had left and were in Poland, and they were Zooming. The assembly let them use their church in the afternoons, and they were Zooming back their meetings to the congregation that was left in Ukraine, wherever they were. There's Zoom for you. That could never have happened. Long ways around. Cahul in Moldova. Moldova is the poorest country in Europe. It's not part of the European Union. It's like 30, 40 years ago. I got to Moldova, lots of other stops along the way. Came across this ministry called CMI Aid. It's Christian Ministries International Aid. Sorry about this, Stephen. Started by an Australian brother. I know the relationship between Australia and New Zealand is like the Americans and the Canadians. So I feel your pain. In any case, their slogan, "The love of Christ compels us." This Christian organization, brethren, people that started it back when the Iron Curtain lifted, this guy was in his early 20s. There's Matt there, his wife Ruth, their kids. They have 40, 50 believers working with them in this ministry. We never hear of it. He's commended out of assemblies in Sydney. A lot of his workers commended out of assemblies in Romania. We don't hear. I can tell you, I've never been face-to-face, interacted with a team of people who are doing more to maximize everything they have in meaningful ways, in creative ways, in practical ways, is this group, CMI Aid. The only thing that explains it is that verse. That's the slogan for their ministry. The love of Christ compels us. It's the only thing that explains what they do and the way in which they do it. It's amazing. I've been around. You know, as I tell people, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. I've been around. I've never seen a group of people doing the variety of things that they're doing in the spirit in which they're doing it. And so that CMI Aid, I don't have time. Here, they have an assembly going there in Zernesti. They run their own fire department. They have got fire trucks. And the workers are volunteer fire department, firefighters. And they look after 14 villages. Moldova is not like here. For most people, if you don't get by, you're left behind. There is no social aid. They came up with, how much respect and goodwill do you think is generated by a Christian organization at their cost go out and fight fires for 14 communities that surround them? That's called recommending. That's the love of Christ. That's what Christ makes us do. Not by compulsion. He's not forcing us to do it. We do it because we love him, which is the way stronger motive. I can't go into all the things they're doing. They are receiving and sending all kinds of humanitarian aid. Oh, this is a story and a half. It's happening today. They have like a museum. And it's a living museum. And they put on a story in the fall of every year. They completely paint rooms. This is like, you can see like on the bow of a ship. This is a room that's been painted that way. This year, starting right now, they are taking thousands, I think it's 9,000, school children, Moldovan school children, public school system. They are bringing them, busing them here, and they go through this living museum. It's the story of Peter Mueller and his orphanages in England and his travel over to America. What did I say? George Mueller. Peter Mueller was a skier back in the... Anyways, some of you will remember him. Not that he's not that guy. This is guys better. They have a teacher's resource for the public. The public school teachers don't have computers. In their Bethesda Center, they have resource centers. They have a copy center for teachers. They get a 200 copies a week limit, budgeted. It's just amazing. It's amazing. They look after the homeless. And now I am going to get in trouble with Daniel. They, at that time, 50 to 60 hot meals taken to shut-ins. Now I'm talking about people, there's no home care. If you're in the condition of this woman, former teacher, this guy, his name was Hunter, you're on your own. And if you don't have family, you're in trouble. This ministry, every day, they cook 50 to 60 hot meals. Half of them go out, are delivered to these folks, and they don't just leave them on the door and knock the door. It's not skip the dishes or something. They knock the door, they go in, they talk to the people, treat them like human beings. And then the rest of it is done for their dinner. I've got a great story here, but I can't. There's a guy living in there. We're walking past a house. It was actually a church building. And I wondered, why didn't they go into the church building? And I'm looking at this thing. There's no door on this. There's a man who got hit in the head. He's about 40 years old. He couldn't work, do anything. He lays in a bed in this dilapidated shed. And they bring food to him and are a friend to him. Even the dogs get a loaf of bread. It's amazing what they're doing. Go to Facebook, CMI Aid, and I'm going to... Tonight, Matthew Hillier and the guy that works with him, who's a Romanian, Dan Marianuk, they are going to be telling their story at Tavistock Bible Chapel. So that's not too far away, 6 o'clock, and if you can make it, you won't be disappointed. I went on from there, Southeastern. I'll tell this one and then I got to stop. But I contacted, he's a CMML worker, George Murray. He and his wife are in the handbook. They've been there since the Iron Curtain fell. And I said, looks like I'm going to get to Keller Rouge around noon. Can I take you and your wife out for lunch? And he said, well, that'd be nice. Very great. And so I continued on to Southeast Romania and I get a text back. We have 13 Ukrainian women living with us. They want to make lunch for you. And so I diverted. I went to their house, and they put on this lunch. They had borscht for me, pierogies, everything. See, in Winnipeg, 1 out of 7 people descend from Ukraine. So we know all these foods. And these women, out of the 13, I think there's 2 or 3 grandmothers, a bunch of mothers, and then there was a few girls, daughters. And this woman here. So they served us this, and then as we're finishing off, George Murray tells her to tell the story from yesterday. And so she tried, as soon as she tried to speak English, she couldn't really speak English, she became overwhelmed with emotion. And all these other women became overwhelmed with emotion. And George steps in, and he says, okay, I'll explain it. This woman, the morning before I got there, had received a phone call from her husband. All their husbands and sons had to stay in Ukraine to fight the Russians. They were in a town called Mykolaiv. It's always in the news. It's in the disputed area down in the south of the country. And if they get past Mykolaiv, they get to Odessa. The point is, her husband's there. He phones her. He's phoning her to say goodbye to her and their daughter. They'd been chased into the basement of a building by the Russian army. There was helicopters going overhead. George said you could hear it through the telephone. And he's phoning to say goodbye to his kids, his wife and his child. So you can imagine why they were all emotional. And as he's telling it, they're still all emotional. And they got off the phone and they started to pray. George was praying. And about 20 minutes later, she got another phone call. It's her husband. The helicopters went away. And after a few moments, they decided to go take a look on the street. The soldiers were gone. He was safe. They're all traumatized people, as we might expect. But God is at work in the midst of all that. I just got this prayer request yesterday. This guy was a vet, a veterinarian, known to George Murray. Veterinarian. As soon as the war broke out, he went and took medic training so he could do veterinarian work on soldiers. Yesterday, day before yesterday, he had his legs blown off. And so they're asking, sending out prayer requests. It's too bad. This is another amazing ministry. It's bigger than the one I was telling you about. They're doing tremendous work. Couple from Vancouver, British Columbia, commended 30 years ago when the Iron Curtain fell. It's tremendous what they're doing. So look that up, Integra, but most of it's in Slovakian. But look it up. And sorry, guys. It's good stuff, all good stuff. And as you are partnering together with MSC Canada, you are partnering together with all of this. God is faithful. Father, we do know that you are faithful, and we commend to you all the things that we've been caused to think about this morning. A lot of things outside of where we live, the lives we live, our comfort zones. Father, we entrust all of these folks, mentioned and unmentioned, to you, the God who is ever-present, omniscient, and all-powerful. We bless you. We thank you that we can serve you, and we commend ourselves to you in Jesus' name. Amen.